It's summer 1931, San Francisco. On the fourth floor of the Levi Strauss & Company factory, CEO Walter Haas stares at the piles of folded blue jeans. Tower after tower of unsold Levi's 501s, the denim pants that manual laborers in the Southwest swear by. Haas's brother-in-law and company treasurer Daniel Koshlin wanders over. He stares at the nearest pile of jeans, or, as Levi's calls them, waist overalls.
You know how many waist overalls we got piled up here?
Haas doesn't reply. He senses Koshlin is eager to answer his own question.
I'll tell you how many. 10,000 pairs. Before the crash, that would have lasted us 6 months.
2 years ago, the Great Depression killed demand for denim, and this pile's been growing ever since. In 1931, jeans are workwear. Tough, durable pants worn exclusively by men who earned their pay through hard, physical toil. But now millions of those men are unemployed, and they're no longer buying jeans. In 2 years, Levi's sales have tumbled from $4 to $2 million. Its salesmen now return from field trips with empty order books and harrowing tales of grinding poverty. But Haas refuses to downsize. He and the rest of the family that own Levi Strauss & Company pride themselves on treating their workers well. Haas knows that if he lays people off, he'll be condemning them to destitution. After all, job openings are rare, and in 1931, there's no unemployment insurance. Haas turns to Koshlin.
How long can we hold out? The reserves are almost gone. We're talking weeks, a couple of months at most.
Haas looks back at the towers of unsold 501s. He thinks of the workers on the floors below, whose future he now holds in his hands. Then, he straightens his back.
Our family has money. We can keep this show on the road, and that's what we're going to do. No one loses their job. At least, not yet.
But Haas knows dipping into his own deep pockets is slapping a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. The family can't keep the company afloat indefinitely. And right now, with the economy in the pits, the chances of a rebound seem slim. But an all-American hero is about to come riding to Levi's rescue. The cowboy.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts. From Wondery, I'm David Brown, and this is Business Wars. They're the wardrobe fixtures that refuse to fade, the pants that transcend age, class, and nationality. And on any given day, half the world pulls on a pair. We're talking, of course, about jeans. In our new series, we unzip the rivalry behind three iconic denim brands: Levi's, Lee, and Wrangler. Today, they lead a $90 billion global industry. Yet their success didn't come easy. For decades, jeans were just workmen's overalls. But then jeans makers embraced the romance of the Western frontier, and everything changed. This is Episode 1, Cowboys and Indigos. It's summer 1935, and in rural Wyoming, half a dozen cowhands ready the horses as the morning sun peeks over the horizon. The ranch owner leans against a fence post and watches them saddle up. He's got a white Stetson hat, a green cotton shirt, and a face as craggy as the Bighorn Mountains that loom behind him. He rolls a cigarette and looks to the nearby log cabin. Just outside, some tenderfoots from New York are donning brand new cowboy boots. They've come to this dude ranch to live out their nostalgic Western fantasies. The rancher finishes his cigarette, pops it in his mouth, and saunters over to his guests. As he nears, he hears two of the men arguing about their duds.
"You're wrong, I'm telling you. Levi's 501s, that's what real cowboys wear. The man in Abercrombie and Fitch said so." "Abercrombie and Fitch? What's some store in Manhattan know about ranching? See these? These are Lee 101 cowboy pants. I repeat, cowboy pants."
The man in the 501s turns to the rancher.
"Hey, can you settle this for us, Lee or Levi's? What's a true cowboy wear?"
The rancher calmly lights his hand-rolled cigarette. He feels like a wildcat surrounded by house cats, but there's more money in tourists than longhorns these days. He takes a drag on a cigarette and eyes the competitive New Yorkers.
"Well, partner, I'm a Levi's man myself."
"Ha ha, told ya."
The rancher ignores the gloating 501 wearer and continues.
"But, well, there's nothing wrong with a pair of Lee 101s. Sometimes when nature bangs hard on the door, I wish my Levi's had a zipper rather than a button fly. And I hear the 101's got a U-shaped crotch. It makes life more comfy in the saddle."
The man wearing Lee jeans looks confused.
"So why do you wear Levi's then?"
"Well, see now, there were no Lee 101s when I began ranching. The choice was simple. Levi's 501 shrunk to fit. They ain't never let me down, so I got no reason to change up."
One of the women steps forward. She's wearing neatly pressed blue jeans with pearlescent snaps.
"Say, are Lady Levi's any good? Vogue rated them very highly."
"Miss, I claim no knowledge of ladies' jeans. In fact, I didn't even know there was such a thing. Now, the lady folk here wear men's jeans if they wear jeans at all. Anyhow, it's time we got y'all on horseback. Otherwise, it'll be supper, not breakfast time, when we reach the Bighorns."
These East Coasters might be turning ranches into fashion shows, but they're also a lifeline for the ranchers and the jean makers who got hit hard during the Depression. Every year, tens of thousands of middle-class city folk go west to play cowboy and cowgirl, and they all want to look the part. So now, America's denim dealers are happy to oblige. Levi Strauss & Company has already capitalized on its Old West origins. It's made a saddle man with a branding iron the face of its ads. But with its new Lady Levi's, it's moving into uncharted territory. Until Lady Levi's, durable denim jeans were for working men, miners, woodsmen, mechanics, construction workers, cowboys, and the city slickers pretending to be them, of course. Now Levi's wants to woo dude ranching women with a newly redesigned jean that gently skims the hips and offers a more flattering fit thanks to its higher waist. But Lee is also on a quest to round up sales at the dude ranches. It's sponsoring the rodeo circuit. It's also advertising its pre-shrunk Lee Rider 101 cowboy pants as ideal for true and wannabe cowpokes alike. And Lee's got another edge: distribution. Lee is America's biggest workwear manufacturer. Its jeans and overalls are on sale in stores nationwide. In comparison, Levi's is a homebody. Abercrombie & Fitch might stock Levi's, but in 1935, it's just a single store in Manhattan. The vast majority of Levi's are sold in mom-and-pop stores in just three states: Arizona, Nevada, and Levi's home state of California. But with the cowboy craze spurring sales, Levi's will soon spread.
It's summer 1939, and on Treasure Island in San Francisco Bay, a middle-aged couple from Iowa is visiting the Golden Gate International Exposition. They've boated the canals of this new man-made island, learned about the atom-smashing cyclotron, and cheered on a game of water polo. Now, they're in the Vacation Land building. The husband squints at his guidebook.
Vacation Land. All the outdoors brought under one roof. Oh, listen to this, Nettie. This building covers 4 acres.
Nettie visibly sags. They've been walking for hours. All she wants right now is to put her feet up. But then she hears the strains of an old Western tune.
Frank, do you hear that music? Let's go see where it's coming from.
Nettie and Frank squeeze through the crowds and close in on the source, the Levi Strauss & Company exhibit. Levi's exhibit is small but eye-catching. It's a miniature rodeo populated by 3-foot-high puppets in Levi's pants and Western shirts. And there are no strings. The scene's all electric. Nettie's eyes rest on the 2 cowboy puppets strumming guitars.
Oh, Frank, isn't this just darling? That one there looks just like Gene Autry.
The similarity between the puppet and Hollywood's famous singing cowboy is no coincidence. In fact, all the Levi's puppets are based on real people, including Judge Maxwell McNutt, president of the American Rodeo Association. Suddenly, the Bronco in the middle of the scene comes to life. The audience cheers as it bucks up and down, trying to toss the red-shirted cowboy on his back and into the dust. After the show, Levi's reps fan through the crowds, handing out postcards. Nettie takes one and flips it over to see a black-and-white photo of 7 smiling cowgirls wearing jeans. The caption reads, "Showing their Levi's, California Rodeo Salinas." She turns to her husband.
"We should send this to Hillary. She'll like this."
With millions of people visiting the Golden Gate Exposition, the postcards and mechanical rodeos spread the Levi's name far and wide. In the months that follow, orders start dribbling in from stores where no Levi's salesman has set foot before. Thanks to the exposition, people in states like Iowa, Oklahoma, and Texas now want Levi's too. Levi's Eastern Advance has begun. But as the number of people wearing Levi's grows, so do the complaints about a design flaw that the company's laughed off for years. But Levi's CEO is about to realize that joke's not funny anymore. It's 1941, and Levi's CEO Walter Haas is on a fishing and camping trip in Northern California. He's steered his family's company through the ravages of the Depression, and now he's ready for some R&R. As his guides pitch the tents, Haas sits on a log in his 501s, still wet from wading in the river all day. He stokes the fire as the sun sinks below the tree line. He sees the guides whisper to each other and glance at him, but he thinks nothing of it. As he stokes the fire some more, one of the guides approaches.
"Mr. Haas, your pants are still damp. You should stand over the fire a while. It'll help them dry out."
"Yes, good idea. Thanks."
The guide stifles a snicker as he wanders away. Haas stands and feels the flames warming his legs. But it's not just his legs that are getting warmed. It's also the copper rivet at the base of his fly. The 501's crotch rivet dates back to the 1870s. It fastens the fly flap to the jeans by punching right through the fabric. But the guides know that rivet also brings danger. The guides join Haas at the fire and glance at the now searing metal bolt on the front of Haas's jeans.
"How are your pants now?"
"Oh, they're pretty dry now. In fact, I think I'll sit back down."
The guides maintain their poker faces as Haas sits and the red-hot rivet makes skin contact.
"Oh!"
Haas's howl rings out through the forest. Like many a cowboy before him, his 501s have just branded his manhood, and the guides have made their point. First thing Monday, Haas orders the immediate removal of the 501's crotch rivet. But Levi's fans don't get long to snap up a pair of the revised 501s. In December 1941, the U.S. joins World War II and imposes strict controls on production and materials. Supplies of Levi's and Lee jeans run dry as the two companies switch to producing garments for the troops. Faced with a shortage of materials, Levi's drops its Lady Levi's line. Lee uses its ads to promise customers that its jeans will return when the war ends. And with their favorite jeans now hard to find, the war only amplifies the intense customer loyalty these brands cultivate. It's 1944, and in a hospital in Klamath Falls, Oregon, a patient's just arrived at the ER. He's fallen from a ladder and broken his leg. As he squirms in pain on the stretcher, a nurse grabs a pair of scissors and moves in to cut off his jeans. The man jerks up.
What are you doing?
The shocked nurse pauses.
I'm cutting off your pants.
Oh, no, you're not. No, these are Levi's 501s, and they're too damn hard to get. You leave them be.
The nurse stares at the man's tight-fitting, greasy, paint-flecked pants.
Sir, it'll be very painful if we have to yank them off.
The man lays back down.
I don't care. I'll take the pain. Just save my Levi's.
Customers don't have to go to such extremes to keep wearing denim for long. When the war ends in 1945, Lee and Levi's return to the stores, eager to get back to brawling for the cowboy dollar. But the jeans giants are about to find they're no longer the only desperados in town. There's a new challenger swaggering their way, and it goes by the name of Wrangler. You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. As business owners and managers, you use software for your business every day. You use one piece of software to manage your customers, another to manage your employees, another to manage your finances, and the list goes on. You buy these pieces independently and hope they fit neatly together like a puzzle. And then you find out the hard way that they don't, and you end up with a mess at the heart of your business operations. Does any of this sound familiar? Well, fortunately, Zoho offers a solution to this chaos. It's called Zoho One. Zoho One is a suite of around 50 pre-integrated business applications that fit together beautifully. So instead of dealing with disparate software from multiple vendors with multiple contracts and price points, you deal with one vendor with all the pieces of the business software puzzle neatly put together, offered at a very attractive price. Now, if this sounds interesting to you, you got to check out Zoho One at zoho.one. That's Zoho.one. With Zoho, you're not just licensing apps. You're licensing peace of mind. Late 1946, Greensboro, North Carolina. In the headquarters of workwear maker Bluebell, Rodeo Ben smiles at the senior executives who've come to see his handiwork. Rodeo Ben's a 50-something tailor with a chubby, clean-shaven face. He made his name as the outfitter of rodeo champs and movie cowboys like Gene Autry and Roy Rogers. But this is his toughest assignment yet. Thanks to a series of mergers and acquisitions, Bluebell recently leapfrogged Lee to become America's number one workwear manufacturer. For years, it's made store brand jeans for department stores like JCPenney. Now, Bluebell wants to launch its own brand of cowboy duds, a market that's booming off the back of a flood of Hollywood westerns. Trouble is, Bluebell's an East Coast company. It's best known for railroader overalls with no cowboy cred at all. In fact, all it's got right now is a name. Wrangler. Now, it needs Rodeo Ben to design a pant that'll inspire a stampede. Bluebell president Jared Fox settles into his chair and looks at Rodeo Ben.
Ben, we're all set, and I'm really keen to see what you've come up with.
Rodeo Ben nods and opens the door to the meeting. A square-jawed model with broad shoulders swaggers into the room. He's dressed in a bright red western shirt, cowboy boots, and blue jeans. He hooks his thumb into his belt loops and nods a hello at the executives. Rodeo Ben gestures toward the model's pants.
These are the final word in cowboy jeans. They're made from the heaviest denim around because cowboys will pay more for tougher jeans. I also used a zip fly because it's easier than buttons when you're wearing gloves.
Understood. Please, continue.
It's a five-pocket pant with a fitted appearance instead of the baggy look of workman's jeans. Rodeo pros need tough pants, but they also want to look good in the arena.
Rodeo Ben points to the pockets.
The pockets are deep, watch pocket included. That's so nothing falls out when you're riding. The flat rivets mean they don't scratch the saddle either. And the belt loops are wider apart at the front, you'll see, so rodeo performers can wear their championship buckles. Some of them are the size of saucers.
Rodeo Ben moves on to the legs.
Now, usually cowboy pants are cut square, but I cut these wide and long to compensate for how the pant rides up the leg when you mount a horse.
The model turns to show the executives the backside of the jeans.
Pockets sit high on the rear so you won't sit on your billfold when riding. Instead of leather waist labels that stick to saddles on hot days, I use press cord. Finally, the back pockets have W-shaped stitching on them for Wrangler. So there we are. What do y'all think?
Fox rises from his chair and starts clapping. The other executives follow suit. These cowboy-cut jeans will become the 13 MWZ, Wrangler's iconic rodeo jean. But designing the right duds is only the start. To beat Lee and Levi's, Wrangler needs the right marketing, too. It's October 1947, and the annual championship rodeo is underway at Madison Square Garden. For the next 6 weeks, the Manhattan Stadium will be devoted to bucking broncos, wild horse races, and calf roping contests. And for Bluebell, that offers a chance to spread the word about Wrangler jeans. Backstage, Jim Shoulders watches a Wrangler salesman dig through a large box of folded blue jeans. Shoulders is a 19-year-old from Tulsa, Oklahoma, and a rising rodeo star. And later today, he'll be riding broncos bareback. The salesman pulls a pair of Wranglers from his box and hands it to Shoulders.
Try these. I reckon they'll fit.
Shoulders drops his pants and pulls on the Wranglers. After zipping them up, he twists around to check how they look from behind.
I gotta say, it's a nice fit. I like them.
The rep smiles. He's been handing out free Wranglers to every rodeo performer he can find. The hope is the sight of rodeo stars and Wranglers will inspire sales.
That's great, Jim. So will you wear them in the arena?
Sure, I don't see why not.
Fantastic. You know, I also got a shirt you might like.
The salesman pulls a black shirt from the box. Shoulders holds it up and stares at the snaps on the pocket flaps. Then he turns it around and frowns. The word Wrangler is stitched across the back in 2-inch-high yellow letters.
This looks like a signboard. I'm not wearing no signboard. I'll wear your jeans, but I'm not wearing this.
But while Shoulders snubs the shirt, the sight of him and other rodeo champs in the new jeans with the W stitch on the back pockets sparks interest on the rodeo scene. Bluebell also sends salespeople west to charm the mom-and-pop stores that dominate the Western apparel market. Instead of giving them the hard sell, they use down-to-earth friendliness to convince the small-town store owners that Wrangler is the kind of brand that gets them and their customers. And when the cowboys and rodeo performers notice the benefits of Rodeo Ben's attention to detail, they switch allegiance. Young cowhands start riding out in Wranglers rather than the Lees and Levi's their pa and grandpa wore. Soon, Wrangler will capture 98% of sales to working cowboys and rodeo performers. But by the time Wrangler drives its rivals off the range, a new market is emerging, one that's going to turn denim into the uniform of defiance. On the next episode, a Latvian with wanderlust creates the modern jean, Levi Strauss joins the 49ers, and an automobile breakdown spawns a denim empire.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Wondery, this is episode 1 of Denim Wars or Business Wars. A quick note about recreations you've been hearing. In most cases, we can't know exactly what was said at the time. Those scenes are dramatizations, but they are based on historical research. Now, if you'd like to learn more about the life of Levi Strauss, check out Lynn Downey's book, Levi Strauss, The Man Who Gave Blue Jeans to the World. I'm your host, David Brown. Tristan Donovan wrote this story. Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Edited and produced by Emily Frost. Sound designed by Kyle Randall. Kate Young is our associate producer. Our executive producers are Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie. Created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.